Greetings and salutations, everyone. Welcome to the Delta Flyers with Tom and Harry as we journey through episodes of Star Trek Voyager. Your two hosts along this journey are my fellow Voyager actor, who in 2004 directed two episodes of the television show The Days, Mr. Robert Duncan McNeil, and myself, your favorite forever ensign, Garrett Wong. Remember, you can get the full version of this podcast by signing up to become a patron at patreon.com/TheDeltaFlyers.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Tell me about that show. I don't even remember
the
that show.
Days.
Yeah, what
so
was that?
So it was ABC. What was it, 2004, you said?
Yes. Mm-hmm. You did two
so
episodes.
2004, ABC was like the bottom of the ratings. They had no hits on. They had nothing. Lost hadn't premiered. Desperate Housewives hadn't premiered. They just didn't have any hits.
Yeah, they were hurting.
They were hurting. They were the lowest rated network. And they came up with this plan to partner with advertisers and basically produce shows that the advertisers would own and produce, and they'd air them in the summer. So they'd give the advertisers, instead of selling ad time directly to them, they just give them an hour on the network and they could do whatever they wanted. They just had to provide free content for ABC. It was literally like, what do we do when we have really bad ratings and no hits? And so this show that the advertisers basically produced, it was a conglomerate of ad buyers called, was it Unilever? Or I can't remember the name of it. And they bought the 9 o'clock hour on Sunday night or whatever it was, you know, not a great hour. ABC gave it to them for a price. And then they produced a show called The Days.
Oh, wow.
And it was, I think, 6 episodes. It was a summer short series, six or eight episodes. I can't even remember.
Yeah.
And they were going straight to series, no pilot, super low budget. And yeah, they made the show, but it was awesome. It was about a family called The Days, and they just had all this wacky stuff happen to them in the first episode. And then they're sort of dealing, like, you know, the mother who's been raising kids decides she wants a career, goes, gets a job. And on the first day of work sees her ex is a coworker of hers. And the husband who's worked all his life decides to quit his job because the wife's going back to work. Mm. But then something happened to him. He quits his job. And then the oldest daughter realizes she's pregnant and still in high school, like, and the youngest kid has a panic attack, and I don't know, it was just all this, you know, high stakes things happen,
drama. Everybody's dealing with it. Yeah,
but it was kind of comedic. It was like the whole tone of it was kind of comedic, and anyway, it was fun. It was
enjoyed your experience on it, right?
Yeah, we had some great first time actors. Laura Ramsey, I think, was the teenage girl. She went on to do some big stuff. Evan Peters, his very first job. So Evan Peters just, I think, won an Emmy or something for a Golden Globe for that murderer, the cannibal story.
Jeffrey Dahmer.
Jeffrey Dahmer story. Evan Peters was phenomenal in it, but his very first job was The Days. So we got
to
work.
So that's where you directed him.
Yeah. It was on The Days. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. I thought the days was got it. I thought it referred to as in the days of the week, but the days is the family name. That was their last name.
Yeah. And I think Evan Peters as the middle child or the, you know, the emo kind of kid.
Right.
He was the narrator of the show.
Oh, okay.
He sort of said, my family's kind of, it was almost like the Wonder Years.
Yeah.
That totally dysfunctional
format,
family.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. It was that.
With the voiceover. All right. Yeah. Cool. Well, thank you for you know, filling in the blanks for me there. I had no clue. When I saw that credit, I said, who? Huh? What? And now
it was a very unusual network show that wasn't really a network show. And then that was the summer before Lost and Desperate Housewives and Grey's Anatomy all premiered that year. And then ABC was like, nope, we're not doing this anymore. But we had good ratings. And we finished the days, there was an expectation that we would do more the next summer. But ABC
didn't happen. Yeah.
Took off and they're like, nope, we're not giving away our ad time anymore. It's valuable now. So
yeah, the days got kiboshed. Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you for sharing that with us.
Yeah.
And let us talk about this week's episode.
Okay, let's do. What is it?
It's Critical Care. Let's go watch this show. We'll be right back with our recap and discussion of Critical Care for our Patreon patrons.
Sounds like a medical show. Is it a medical show?
It does sound
like
a medical show.
Did we just go from a sci-fi show to a medical show?
I think we did. Okay. I think we did. So we'll be right back with our recap discussion of Critical Care for our Patreon patrons. Please stay tuned for your bonus material. All right. We are back from watching Critical Care.
Yes.
I don't remember seeing this episode at all. This is my first time seeing this episode.
Definitely my first time seeing it.
And I'm shocked because remember in the beginning I said, I saw all of them. I saw every single one, Robbie. I watched them all. No, I didn't watch this one.
And it's funny because I actually enjoyed this episode and maybe it broke the rules. Like we didn't see Seven until the very last scene, right?
I am so happy you said that.
Oh, really?
Yes. You know why?
Why?
Because the director, I felt that you were going to come be critical of him.
Well, so I can start breaking this down. As an overall experience, I actually kind of enjoyed this one. I thought the actors were good. Our guest stars were really good.
I agree. And your words are warming my heart right now. They really are. I'm very surprised. And I'm very happy to hear you say that because the overall experience was a good one.
It's not. It's not in my top 10 episodes.
No. But I'm going to say it's a good episode. I enjoyed it. I was entertained by it.
And I'd never seen it.
Right. No. And the guest stars pulled out all the stops. They didn't phone it in. You know, everyone was doing a really great job. And the other thing, I had no idea John Cassier was in this. I had no clue that he was. And I've known John for eons because I never saw this episode and because I didn't work when he worked clearly.
We didn't work.
So I had no clue actors. John was even here. And I'm a huge fan of John Cassier. Definitely.
Well,
let's talk about stuff here.
Let's first do our poetry synopsis.
You want to go that route? Okay.
Yeah.
I was so excited. I thought we would jump right into guest stars, but
this is our brand. We are a creative, poetic couple. You and I,
we are. Here we go. Okay. My haiku. For Critical Care.
Yes.
And I'm happy that you called us a couple in a strange, bizarre, kind of weird way. Yeah. Here we go. My haiku for Critical Care. EMH stolen. The doctor bonds with R12. Ethics conundrum.
Ooh, wow. Yeah,
I
nice.
Got really poetry.
Yeah, you
poetic
did.
On that one. Yeah.
And you got it all in there.
Here we go. Yeah.
Here we go with our limerick. Limerick synopsis for Critical Care goes a little something like this.
Very excited.
Doc's mobile emitter is stolen based on a falsehood. He learns medical ethics are not easily understood. Tuvok is Janeway's man. Doc comes up with a clever plan that sometimes you must break the rules for the greater good.
Very nice.
I had to get Tuvok. Was Janeway's man because
that moment took the cake. That was the best moment in this entire episode.
It was so
clearly watching Kate grab Tim Russ's
hold his hand.
Here's my man, and keep holding it, and kept holding it. And that I'm sure that's probably your
great.
It
was a highlight for this episode.
It truly was. Thank you for that.
All right, we have a ton of guest stars. I'm going to go through. Yeah. Our credits, and I'm going to give really quickly their first job because we could spend a whole episode just on our guest stars, but we can't. Okay, teleplay by James Caan. James Caan actually wrote like four
He
Star
has.
Treks.
Do you remember him, meeting him?
Nope, do not at all.
But because James, I think I asked you that question and you said, I think this is an outside right, outside assignment or something like that, yeah. Right? But this guy was there, clearly.
He was there the last season, I think, but he only wrote, I don't remember what else he wrote.
Okay, anyway,
he wrote
this.
Yeah. His specialty as a writer, he was a medical specialist, started his very first job was on St. Elsewhere, the hospital series back in 1984.
Forgot about that show.
James Caan wrote this teleplay for this. The story was by Bob Daugherty and Ken Biller,
okay,
who we know well. So yes, they'd come up with a story. James was assigned to write it. The director is Terry Wendell.
Yeah.
We've talked about Terry before.
I almost guessed him. I almost
really?
Did. Yes, I really came close to
guessing. I didn't realize he directed so many. I think he directed like
he
four.
He directed, well,
maybe more than four.
It's
going to
be just like your thought of Colby not coming back later. And he keeps coming back. So this is like a Wendell Colby connection for you.
It's weird.
Yeah.
It's weird. Okay.
But you did guess, did you guess Biller?
I did.
Yeah, so you got that right.
Yeah.
And Daugherty.
No, wait. No, I said Brian Fuller, didn't I?
Oh, you did. That's right.
Yeah. Dang no, it. I was wrong all around.
But Daugherty, one of my favorite writers, he's there. Mm-hmm. So I'm happy for that.
Okay, here we go with our guest stars. I'm going to bang through them real quick because there's a ton of them. John Kassir as Gar. He was the traitor. His first time on television was in 1984 on the competitive talent show Star Search. He beat Sinbad, the comic.
What?
Star Search. That was his first gig.
I used to watch that religiously. Wait a minute. He beat Sinbad?
Yes, he did.
I completely forgot he was doing stand-up comedy? Is that what it was?
Yeah. Yeah, he was in the stand-up comedy section.
Oh, my God.
So funny, huh?
Yeah.
All right. Banging through these guest stars. Greg Itzen. Greg Itzen plays Dysick, the blue level surgeon.
Yeah.
Greg Itzen passed away just in July.
Oh,
74 years old. He was very good friends with Bob Picardo. I just want to take a moment about Greg Itzen, because Greg Itzen was an awesome actor, good friends with Picardo. Mm-hmm. I went with Bob to see him in a play one time.
That's a sad
great man. Yeah, and sad very year. Sad yeah. He got some kind of infection from a surgery that happened. He was 74
years old. This was a untimely and not meant to happen thing. Then.
Yeah, just happened in this past July in 2022. So sad to not have Greg Itzen around, because he was such a talented actor. His first job was a miniseries called Backstairs at the White House. And he played a White House tour guide. It was, I think, 8 episodes behind the scenes of people that work at the White House. So it
that sounds like a great show.
The lower decks
of White House dramas. Wow.
And that was Greg Itzen's first appearance on film that I'm aware of.
I like
We had Paul Shearer playing Vosge. His first job was, and he was the Red Decks head
Red
doctor.
Red Decks head doctor, Vosge.
His very first job was 1988 on The Van Dyke Show playing Eric. And dang. I guess it was a sitcom, Dick Van Dyke and
his real
life son.
Yeah.
Matthew something Van Dyke, I think was his name. They played a father and son just like themselves in a sitcom.
Oh.
And Eric's first job was that. So that was Paul Shearer's first job was as Eric.
Then we have
Tebbis. Tebbis was the poor young man who
just
wanted to be a doctor.
Yeah.
Dublin James. His first
That's
job.
His first name? Dublin?
Dublin James, yes.
Wow.
Yes, sir. First job, 1996, in the sitcom revival of Saved by the Bell called Saved by the Bell, The New Class. It was like the next generation of Saved by the Bell.
Saved by the Bell, TNG.
The New Class, TNC.
Like TNC, that's right, TNC.
Okay. And then we also had Larry Drake playing Chellick, who was kind of the administrator guy. Very well known for LA Law. That was his big. I think he may have won an Emmy for that or something.
Oh.
And we have some co-stars. I'm just going to bang through these. Here we go. Level Blue Nurse, the lady that got the medicine upstairs. Christina Chauncey. Christina Chauncey.
Mm-hmm.
Her first job, 1993, In the Heat of the Night, which was filmed outside of Atlanta.
I remember that show.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. That was a good show. I like
that show. She was a local Atlanta wannabe actor, got in a show, and then brought her out to LA, her experience. So.
She's like your cousin.
Yeah, yeah. Next is the med tech, very kind of a small role early on.
In Red. with Vogue?
I think so.
Right?
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
MedTech was Stephen O'Mahony. Uh-huh. O'Mahony. Yeah. Stephen O'Mahony. His first job was in 1999, a B movie called Murder Cycle. Murder Cycle.
About a bicycle that murders people. So is
I
this
think it was
the,
a motorcycle,
of,
killer motorcycle.
Okay. I've envisioned like a 10-speed bike murdering people. No, or Bob Picardo's mountain bike murdering people. Yeah, that's what I envisioned.
Okay. We have the husband on screen. We saw a few like kind of bits, comedy bits, right? When we were on the bridge.
Yes.
The husband, he was very funny to me.
Yeah.
His name is Jim O'Hare. He's from Chicago. His first job, 1993. The Untouchables, which was filmed
in
Chicago. No, the series.
The TV series. Oh.
After the movie, they made a TV series, short-lived, filmed in Chicago. Jim O'Hare.
The movie was great. Okay.
Next was the alien miner, also on the view screen. He was the first one they talked to. He was in the big makeup, the big white makeup.
Which guy?
The alien miner is what it's called in the credits.
He
was on screen. The first one they talked to about,
he wanted his
deuterium back or whatever.
He wanted
that back. Okay. Alien miner, John Durbin. His first film was a real low budget movie in 1983 called Rock and Roll Hotel. It was a musical about a battle of the bands in some rundown hotel.
I would like to watch that.
Sounds like a music video made into a movie.
Into a movie.
Yeah.
Which is why I would like to watch that.
1983. Okay. Next is the wife who was on screen, played by Debbie A. Monahan. Her first job, 1984, a TV series called First and Ten, which O.J. Simpson was on. It was about a fictional professional football team and behind the scenes.
I remember that show.
First and Ten, mm-hmm. Debbie A. Monahan.
Mm.
Then we have our last one is Kip, one of the aliens somewhere here. John Franklin was the actor. Young actor, his first job, he's from England, I think. But his first job was in 1984, the movie Children of the Corn.
Oh, the horror film, yeah.
Yeah, Linda Hamilton
those kids?
Was in that. Yeah, he was one of the kids.
Oh, yep. I didn't know Linda was in that.
He was like the kid. I think he was best known.
Okay.
Yeah. Nice. There we go. I'm exhausted.
That's a lot. It is
a lot of guest stars, a lot of first jobs, a lot of trivia.
Yeah.
But we did it. Yeah. Let's get into this story.
Yeah, jump into it. You go.
Okay. So the first thing we see is a space flyby of an alien ship.
Did you like that shot?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
I did.
I did too.
I did very much. We see the alien ship fly by. It's approaching a stormy planet with lots of rundown buildings. There's lightning in the sky. And as it's approaching the city, I made a note.
Yep.
They clearly don't like windows on this planet because there's not a window in sight. All these buildings of the city. And I'm like, where are the windows?
You catch the weirdest stuff, Robbie. I didn't see that at all.
Windows.
Oh, my God. All right.
But I was relieved when they had a night shot of this planet and you could see some windows lit up. I was like, thank God. They've got windows. You couldn't see
them in
the first
shot. How about
they
only come on at nighttime? Maybe that's what it is.
I think so.
It's so hot that they have to have no windows during the day and it just gets translucent at night. There you go.
I think so. Yeah, but we also see there's a floating building or it's a hospital.
It's like a complex. It's not just like a little, it's massive.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Okay. So we go inside this hospital and the first thing I noticed here is, wow, it's mostly humans in here. There's no alien makeup. There's no, I was like, makeup budget, maybe problems. They all look very human, but, we do see an alien walk in. We'll learn this is Gar. He walks in and he's scanned. He's scanned, you know, in a scanner. They say, lift your arms. And Gar, this alien, to me, my first thought was, it looks like Beast from Beauty and the Beast.
Yes.
It has kind of the, you know, kind of a Beast look on it. But it also has a mouth that looks like the Joker from Batman. It
was
like
Yeah.
And then my last thought about that makeup, I went, what is it? No, it's not the Beast. It's not the Joker. It is a character from the musical Cats. That's what I realized. That's why I was so traumatized by it, because everyone knows I hate the musical Cats.
You do.
And that you Gar do. Looks like he belongs in the musical Cats.
Yeah. I thought he was Nausicaan in the beginning, but he's not.
No, and he's
then
Cat.
Then I thought he kind of looks like the Predator guy, but no, he's a cat.
He's Cat. Okay. That's cat. Why I hated him, because he's from the right musical the Cats. Bat. Right off the bat, I couldn't stand him.
Sorry.
Anyway. Yeah, there you go. So there he goes in, and he comes up to one of the aliens who does have some alien makeup on. They were so random, the ones that had it and didn't. Yeah. Mostly they didn't. But he walks up to who we learn is an administrator named Chelik.
Yes.
This is Larry Drake. And I was like, oh, my God, Drake. Yeah. Larry Drake is in this, the administrator.
He has a long resume, that Larry Drake.
Yes. And Larry Drake, a.k.a. Chelik, says, you know, I don't want your junk. You know, I've gotten junk from you in the past. Don't want it.
Yeah.
And Gar's like, no, I got something. It is not junk.
Yeah.
And he pulls out the doctor's mobile emitter. The mobile hollow emitter.
Yeah.
He activates it. The doctor pops in and is like, I think he says, please
state the nature of
the medical emergency.
Yeah. He's like, what?
And he's like, where have you taken me? And we go out to our credits there. So he's stolen the mobile emitter. We know that that's Doc's in trouble.
Yeah.
We come back from our credits. Doctor's demanding to go back on the ship. He's like, why did you kidnap me?
He's not too concerned about being kidnapped, though. I felt like he was like, you know, don't you know the rules of fair play? Kind of a
yes.
Yeah, he didn't care.
Yes. Yeah, it did seem a little less. It did seem, I think there was a couple moments where I was like surprised that Bob Picardo didn't react bigger. This one, when he's first kidnapped, but he was playing it cool. I could buy that. The other is when later on, spoiler alert, when B'Elanna and Tuvok show up.
Yes.
He seemed distracted, but I guess because he was trying to save people. Doc is there. He demands to go back. Suddenly there's an announcement. Lots of injured are coming in. There was an explosion in some mining facility.
Mm-hmm.
Gar basically says to the doctor that he can either, you know, see, you know, treat the wounded patients, or he'll just dismantle his program and sell his subroutines one part at a time.
Right.
So the doctor goes over to help the first injured patient, asks for a hypo spray. They hand him.
Well, they didn't even know what that was.
Yeah,
they were like, a what? They were confused. Yeah.
Yeah. But he, you know, he's handed this primitive tool. It looks painful. And he says something like, this might hurt a little or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The whole scene was shot handheld, by the way.
Oh.
Which is
not
unusual for us. But
no.
My first thought as I was watching this handheld photography and the way it was staged, I was like, oh, it's like ER. ER was kind of a hit back then.
Yeah.
It was a big hit. So I was like, oh, they're imitating ER.
And it also
totally worked, by the way.
No, And there is similar types of energy and motion in the first Star Trek movie, when there's a bunch of, you know, they're taking a lot of hits and explosions, and there's a lot of medical people running around. That same very, you know, kinetic type of shot. So, yes. All right. Are we out of this scene?
We are. We go to a space flyby, Voyager, and we cut inside the hallway, and there is Tom and Harry walking around the corner in hockey uniforms.
Futuristic hockey uniforms. Let's just say that.
Did you notice the numbers that we had?
No, I didn't even look at that at all.
You were number 7. I was number 8.
I don't want 7. I'll take 8. In Chinese culture, 8 is lucky.
Eight is lucky. I know.
Crap,
I thought about that.
7 is crap. 7 is what you do not want. That's
That's why you had the bumps and bruises, because you had the unlucky number.
I had the unlucky number. I was 7-ing out, basically. So
you had bruises on your face.
And I was walking with a limp. Did you see that? I had a bit of a limp as well. I think that we looked good in those hockey uniforms. I do remember they were very hot, because the material that they used
was like plastic suits.
Yeah, didn't breathe at all. It was like we were going to wear, it was almost like wearing a sweatsuit, you know, to lose weight or lose water weight.
Yeah, those saunas, the plastic sauna suits.
Yes, like that's what it looked like.
Yeah.
Or that's how it was operating. There was no breathability to those suits. Yeah.
But we discuss, you know, heading to sick bay to get some treatment for our bumps and bruises. And Harry's like, I don't know if we should go, you know, how he feels about our juvenile holo programs.
Right.
And Tom goes, "Don't worry, I'll come up with something." And and so we go into sick bay, and
I throw you under the bus. I'm like,
"You throw me under the
tell him, Tom. Yeah. You tell him."
I actually liked this little exchange because
it was great. It was a good
one. You could see, like, I was looking down, like trying to think of a story, even from the moment we came in.
Yeah, there's a lot of layers that we put into this. I was proud of you, and I was proud of myself in this scene. I really was.
It was a nice little scene.
Very nice, yes.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
But I tell the doctor that, you know, we were running very serious invasion scenarios, you know, practicing,
right,
you know, for our jobs. I wanted to make it sound like that. And then he just acts weird. He's like, "Please state the nature of the medical emergency."
He says it again. Yeah. Yeah.
And we're like, "Are you okay?" And he says, "Take an analgesic and return to sick bay."
He's not even responding to you. The program's on a loop, and it's not him. So, but our reaction was it made the scene at the end too.
Yeah, it was good. Like,
what the? Yeah, it's good.
It was nice. We go off of his malfunctioning into the briefing room, and B'Elanna says that this is a replicated fake. This is not the real doctor's program. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That the real doctor is missing, and Janeway wants to know, how did Gar take him? How did this happen? She's pissed. In fact, she even tosses the mobile emitter.
Did you like that move? You like that blocking move of her tossing it? Because I thought it was very uncharacteristic. Like, why would Janeway even do that? Like,
that
stood out to me. It is junk, but I would have just still said, this is useless, and I would have put it down. I wouldn't have thrown it in anger. I don't know. Maybe that's her way of, like, just dealing and coping, I suppose.
Well, she's kind of pissed. She takes it out on Tuvok a little bit, you know.
Yeah.
And then Neelix jumps in and says, no, maybe it was me.
Right.
I was trying to, you know, impress him with some good food in my cooking, and he may have gotten food poisoning.
Yes.
Neelix thinks that, you know, that could have been the problem, that the food poisoning led him to the doctor, and then the doctor was so great that's how he discovered the doctor. And so Neelix feels responsible, and
and that really really doesn't come out until the next scene in the corridor. I mean, that, you know what I'm saying? I mean, he talks about how Gar was in sick bay and he might have got food poisoning, but he doesn't really say, like, hey, this is the whole,
he goes a little bit later. He goes out, they go out in the hallway, and Neelix is walking with Janeway next. And
oh, and before that happens, Janeway does say scan for his ion trail. So that's what we're going to do. We're going to find this person and, you know, get to the bottom of this.
Yeah, we're trying to find this guy, Gar, the guy from Cats. Yeah, Neelix and Janeway go out in the hall. Neelix continues to, you know, feels guilty.
Yeah.
I like when she says at the end of the scene, she says something like, I'm sure when the opportunity arises that you'll make the most of it.
Yes, I did like that too.
I knew as soon as she said that, Neelix was going to do something later that was
it was like, you knew.
So obvious to
me. Yes, you knew. Yeah,
he feels bad, so he'll have a callback later where he comes to the rescue or helps in some way.
Yeah.
Then we go to another planet shot. The floating hospital is there. Mm-hmm. The doctor is talking to Vosges, I think.
Yes. They're in the red level at this point.
Yes, so. Down in the red level.
Yeah. Vosges is super, super impressed with the doctor. He's like, mm-hmm. wow, that's the most impressive cortical bypass that I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. And the doctor's like, well, it's just the basic skills. And Vosges is like, well, if I had those basic skills, they would move me up to level blue. And then that's when you start thinking, what the heck's level blue?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's all color coordinated. It's sort of like the ranks of Star Trek.
Yeah. Right? They're in the red level right now. Doctor. Mm-hmm. And the doctor does mention they're low on supplies. And
yes.
He says something like, you know, maybe we can get more supplies from Voyager if you tie your allocator computer into the Voyager computer. So he's trying to, you know, connect with Voyager, get back in communication with them here a little bit. But we learn that this is a very bureaucratic place because I think Vosges says something like, well, you've got to fill out forms. There's triplicate forms. Mm-hmm. And so we sort of established that this allocator thing is running.
Yeah, it's just performing here. It's performing millions of calculations probably per second, and then saying, okay, so this is what has to happen now.
Well, the
so,
doctor even says something like, oh, let me talk to him or something,
right? And he says, like, oh, it's no, not it's him. Yeah, it's
not
computer.
It's not, you can't talk to him, it's our main computer.
Yeah,
so so that we learn that this allocator thing is kind of running the show. And that's when we meet, I think, Tevis, right?
Yeah, because there's an old guy that's coughing, right? There's mm-hmm. a background actor that's going. And then the doctor says, like, why hasn't this patient been treated yet? And that's when mm-hmm. Tevis goes, well, he's waiting for proton imaging and there are a lot of people in front of him. And so that's when the doctor's like, oh, it's nice to see someone knows what's going on. Like, Tevis kind of knows the dialogue and the vocabulary of medicine in a way.
Right? Well, because we learn that he's an aspiring doctor.
Exactly.
He we learn that later. He wants to be a doctor. Mm-hmm. The doc wants to give Vosges some more medicine. And he goes, oh, I don't have enough TC for more medicine.
Right. We don't know what the heck TC like, is at this point. Yeah.
What is TC? So we do hear this term TC, which we're going to learn is...
Treatment coefficient?
Treatment coefficient.
Or is it is that correct?
Something like that. Yeah. I think that's right.
Oh my gosh.
We learn that, but Chelik interrupts and tells the doctor that, you know what? He's negotiated with Gar and to acquire the program. And the doctor basically says, well, you can't force me.
Right. Because Chelik says, come with me. And that's, and the doc basically says, I will not. Yeah. And mm-hmm. that's when he talks about being illegally detained and gets a little side quip in there, or hasn't the rule of law reached this society yet? So that's his little dig at them. But again, he's still very, very calm in the face of what's going on. I feel the doctor is. So
doctor's very calm, but he's not really cooperating yet, but he's not resisting dramatically. He's just expecting he's going to be rescued. But Chelik says the allocator has decided that you need to go to level blue, and the allocator is what, you know, decides what services are required, how our medicine is allocated, all that stuff. So then they go into, don't they go to like a turbo lift kind of vibe?
Yeah, they go to a turbo lift, but you know, as an audience member, you're thinking, okay, so this must be where the worst cases are, because he's so good, he has to go to the blue level. It must be even more tragic cases coming in.
Yeah. And the doctor's like, I assume level blue is your critical care area.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Chelik says something like, well, that's where we have to provide the best care. Yes.
Yeah.
And then we get off and it's like a spa.
It is.
It's
basically a spa.
Yeah. It's crazy. It's beautiful. And Chelik tells the doctor, now this is your, you know, chief responsibility is to take care of these patients. They have a higher TC, he says, than anyone else. And that's when Chelik explains a TC is a treatment coefficient.
That's right.
Coefficient, the allocator, the computer, the artificial intelligence, which is, by the way, just to pause about this, like talking about, to me, I was obsessed this week with this story in the news about Bing. Microsoft's artificial intelligence
software. I didn't see it. What's happening?
Well, they have changed their search engine, or are in the process of changing it from kind of the kind of search engine that we know, which is you put in a question, you get a bunch of links with the sources of, like, you can go see an article in the New York Times, or you can see something on a whatever. Bing and this artificial intelligence now is going to answer your inquiry directly, but it won't give you the sources. It will give you the answer in kind of a, as if the computer is talking back to you. So it will scour the internet, pull out all the pieces, and decide how to communicate that back to you in just a simple summary, I guess. But the danger there is the artificial intelligence is choosing which sources are good.
So it could choose a false source is essentially what it could do. You know,
it's a fascinating game changer in terms of our interaction with the internet and how we interact with it and how things are edited, word I'm looking for, like curated for us by artificial intelligence. And I don't like that, Robbie. I don't know how I feel about it, but this episode, the allocator, I kept thinking of Bing and this Microsoft thing. Like, oh, the allocator is choosing who gets to live and who gets to die. The allocator is deciding, like, all the people are just, they're not questioning the allocator. There's no human empathy built into it. Or if there is, it's overridden by, you know, the coefficient data. I don't know. It's crazy.
I'm just so hesitant, and I'm not a fan of what you just told me, because I do feel like that's like the beginning of the Terminator movie. Linda Hamilton really is going to have to take out Skynet because of this.
Yeah.
You know, so
Microsoft's got Bing, and it's a game changer. Now Google has announced that they're doing a similar thing.
And it's called something else?
It's called something else. So everybody's Apple's, I'm sure, going to have it built into their Safari browser. Like, it's just this will be the game changing shift in the way that we search the internet. And it's going to be big.
Okay.
And it's going to be called the allocator. Okay.
Is that Google's decision? Mm-hmm. It's possible. Wouldn't that be funny? The programmers are Star Trek fans. They said, okay, we're going to call this allocator.
Yeah. Could happen.
Okay. Yeah.
Anyway, where were we? So.
Yeah. He finds out what the treatment coefficient is. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's basically a formula. The more important you are to society, whatever position you hold at your workplace, then you have a higher treatment coefficient, which then entitles you to better, not even better. It entitles you to all the drugs that you need to get better, to help you, all the medicine you need. And this is the creme de la creme area, that blue area that he enters into.
The medicine, all of that is kind of prioritized for these people because supposedly the allocator decides that they have more value,
which is horrible.
And by the way, did you notice that this fancy pants sick bay that they're in looks a lot like our sick bay layout?
It is
like
our sick bay redressed, basically.
Is it really?
I think so. You didn't think it was?
I didn't know, but it definitely looked a lot like our sick bay.
That's what I thought immediately. So you think it's a whole nother set they built?
I think it's another set. Okay. I'll tell you what I do think.
Yeah.
The red level is down on the mess hall set.
Oh, that's redress then. Yes.
That's a redress. Okay. The mess hall set. Well, we have the mess hall on one side.
Yes.
And a hallway in the middle. And then
that empty room, right?
Empty room that looks quarters. Like,
Okay.
We build in quarters or different things there.
You think that's where it was? That one?
Yeah, they took that big room.
Okay. Yep. Sure. I'll buy that.
That's what I think. Yeah. Anyway, this is where we meet Dysik, who is the chief of medicine. He says that that there used to be a dying race, that there were ecological disasters here, but once the allocator was introduced, things started to turn around, and they're trying to save their society, basically. So,
and they also hired Chelik, another alien from a different race, to come and sort of be the manager in a way, you know,
like he's the administrator.
He's the guy that's going to, to make all these decisions and help things move along. Yeah.
We go to space. We see a flyby of Voyager at this point. And on the bridge, we drop out of warp. We find that there's just a probe on screen.
Yeah, we follow the end of the ion trail, and guess what? There's no ship. It's just a little beacon sitting there. Yeah.
And Tuvok suggests that when Gar traded them the iridium ore, it has a brief half-life, and so he can't be far, basically, Tuvok says. Like, the iridium ore only has a three light year half-life or something, a brief half-life, and so he's got to be within a radius of 3 years, basically, is what Tuvok suggests.
Right. Janeway asked for scans, long range scans. Kim comes up with two planets, no atmosphere or tech, T-class nebula, and here's something, an asteroid with approximately 200 humanoid life signs, subterranean structures. And Chakotay says that sounds like a mining operation, and Tuvok says, well, you know, Gar acquired the iridium. If that's where he got the iridium from, well, they may be able to help us find him. So we head on out. She asked Tom to head over to this mining operation that we found on the long-range scans.
We head out for this asteroid. We have a little space flyby with a moon planet that looked kind of cool there.
Yeah.
And then we come back on the bridge, a little time cut, and they're arriving at this planet, this mining planet. And they're hailed.
Asteroid, not a planet.
Asteroid. Yeah. And they're hailed by a very angry alien. very angry.
Did you like his makeup? Yes or no?
Yeah, okay, I did like his makeup. All right, I did like it. And they ask about the guy that they traded with Gar. And he says, you mean thief?
Yeah.
He's not a traitor. He's a thief. They stole my iridium. And she agrees to give it back, which will only be about half the amount that Gar stole, if he, in return, can tell her where the induction units that he also stole came from.
Right.
He says that it was a planetoid called Velos, I think. And I love Kate's reaction in this whole storyline. She just seems exhausted by everyone. She's like constantly going big sides, and her hands are going in her head, and her eyes are rolling. I loved her performance.
I think she did a great job in this episode.
It was very funny.
It was
kind of like, it was kind of like the doctor had the dramatic story, and the rest of us were on this like clue mission of comedy.
Yes.
You know? It was just,
but that's what made this. That's what made this episode great, though. I think a good one because of the weird thing happening. Right? It was two separate episodes almost. Go ahead.
So we come back to Level Blue, back where the doctor's being held. Dysik is there. The doctor comments that Dysik has amazing surgical skills. They basically complement each other. You know, Dysik says, "Well, you obviously had experience with cellular repair." So that's two doctors just.
Gloating for each other, you know, giving each other praise and saying how wonderful they are. Yes.
So we see that they're bonding a little bit, which is going to pay off later.
There is a nurse who's requesting a cytoglobin injection for patient B3, and the allocator approves it. It's authorized. And then that catches the doctor's attention because he knows that that is what you treat chromoviral infection from, which is what Tebis has. And so he was like,
it's what Tebis has down in the red level. But Dysik says, no, up here we just use it to prevent arterial aging.
It's basically Botox, right? So you're trying to, it's something,
and the doctor's
that's for
like
vanity purposes, right?
Yeah. The doctor's like, her arteries are in perfect health. Like, she doesn't need this, but you got somebody downstairs that does need it.
Right.
And he says the boy on the red level would die if he's untreated, and yet he's denied it. And here you're giving it to this person, you know, who doesn't need it. It's not critical.
Yeah.
Dysik basically defers. He says, you know, we're just following the allocator's protocols. And if Tebis's treatment coefficient rises, his TC rises, then he'll get this treatment as well.
Right.
But, you know, so they're kind of in a catch 22 down there because they're sick. Their treatment coefficient's never going to get better because they're sick. No. They're not going to accomplish more things. They're not going to raise that.
No.
So their TC is going down when they need it most.
Yes. Agreed.
Yeah. We go down to Level Red. This is where I made a note. This is definitely the set across from Mess Hall.
okay.
doctors looking at Tevis again, his condition has deteriorated even further.
Yeah.
Vosch says it's because his coenzyme allotment has been reduced because his TC is low. So this is where that catch 22 is catching up with him. Is he's getting less valuable, so getting less medicine that he needs.
Yeah.
And doctor says, well, how can we raise it? Can't we just put in more data? Vosch doesn't like it. He says,
He tries it. He does try it in front of the EMH. And guess what? The allocator just sort of denies it. It's like, nope, you can't verify that this patient is an expert in neutronics or whatever, has knowledge of neutronics. So you can't fool the allocator. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then Tebus wakes up and he knows he's dying. Tebus knows that.
Yeah.
And he even, offers to give the doctor a clean conscience here. He says, there's nothing you can do, doctor.
Yeah.
Thank you, but there's nothing.
Go treat somebody else. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Tebus says, you're wasting your time, doctor. Yeah. You could be spending with other patients. Mm-hmm. Tebus, I love Tebus. He's awesome, by the way.
Good.
What a good guy.
Yes.
And a good actor, too.
Yeah.
But he says, it's not your fault. There's nothing you can do. And we go back up to the blue level.
Mm-hmm.
And the doctor's there. He goes to talk to the nurse. And he says to the nurse about one of the blue patients, like, hey, why didn't that patient get the additional cytoglobin?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And she's like, wait, what? Additional? And he goes, yes. If you look at her chart, you'll see I've increased her dosage. And the nurse is like, well, the other doctors didn't say anything. And, and then the doctor's like, do you want me to tell them you're not doing your job? Sure, I'll.
Yeah.
He is totally conning and scamming her.
You recognize this sort of pattern of dialogue? This happens in more than one episode where a character on Voyager will say, like, do you want me to tell your superior this? You say that to the lackey, right? And they're like afraid and they're like, oh, no. So this has happened before. Yeah.
But it's a nice move by the doctor.
It is.
He goes up to where he knows he can get the medicine for Tevis.
Yeah.
He lies, cons the nurse into helping him, gets the medicine. And I loved at the end of this, she's like, can I assist you? He goes, no, I'll do it myself. You may go. She leaves. Yeah. And he pretends to put
it. Yeah.
Yeah. Like a magician.
He does. He was David Copperfield. It was very smooth.
He kind of
smooth
flips,
operator.
Flips it under his hand.
I think it was a really good move because that's tough because people look at that and say, well, that's nothing. What did he do? Well, there's a lot of issues when you're dealing with props. You can mishandle it and it can fall out of your hand, but I don't know how many takes he did of that. Maybe he did it on the first time, but it looks very good. Yes, I agree.
Nice little detail. And we go back to red level and he takes that medicine back to the red level, walks right past a bunch of other sick patients, goes right to Tebus, gives him the shot. And I love this camera move. It pushed in to Bob Picardo's face in a really tight, dramatic close-up that I thought was just really nice to see a variety of shots, in this episode. We go to a space shot. Voyager's flying over a planet. We're on the bridge. We're still following Gar's trail. And this is where we meet Kip, who is on screen. He is a merchant on Velos. And he says that he convinced me to take the induction units on consignment. This was more than 10 days ago, and I haven't heard from him since. So Tuvok says, well, you seem very experienced. Why would you even trust somebody like Gar? And Kip says, well, he was highly recommended. And basically in this scene, we realize that Tuvok is on the trail, getting closer to Gar.
Yeah.
So first he talks to Kip. And the one thing about this scene when he's talking to Kip, Tuvok leaves his station and comes down to the middle of the bridge. Do you remember this?
Yeah.
And I know what they're trying to set up later, but it's like Tuvok never walks. Like, he should have just already been there.
Yes. I knew you were going to say that.
You don't just leave your station and sort of walk down to the railing.
Meander over to the railing.
They should have just had somebody at his station. He should have been down there, by Chakotay and Janeway or something. And then it would have been in the right position for later, but
maybe he was doing performance art and he was symbolizing a babbling brook just meandering down the bridge. Okay. All right.
We have a quick jump. So they talk to Kip and we jump to the buyer that they're talking about. Yeah. We don't do this on our show very often. This sort of jump cutty, like Oh, yeah. We're talking to Kip, and then suddenly we're talking to the next guy.
We jump up to the husband. Yeah.
To the husband.
We're on the trail. Yeah.
Yeah. The buyer who knows that he knows it was a mistake to you know, play his part in this. Yeah. It was, he says, a suggestion to his wife, who's now even left him.
Yeah. He said, basically, you know, he recommended Gar to Kip because he couldn't say no to his wife. And mm-hmm. so she's the one that said, you have to definitely trust Gar. And so guess what? She left him, the husband, because Gar is who she's truly in love with. So we have this very soap opera sort of B storyline here. That's very funny though.
Well, Tuvok says something like, Tuvok goes, well, she must know him very well if you trusted him.
Oh, and he goes, yeah, they're
and he goes, they're friends.
Friends with benefits, basically. So, yeah.
And then Janeway goes, do you know where we could find her? And he starts crying.
Yeah.
Like, she
left me.
Oh, funny. So funny.
And then we jump to her on the view screen again. Yes. Something we never do, very rarely, right?
Very rarely. Jump cut to the wife. She says she ran off with Gar, left the husband.
Right. No, but the way she starts off is hilarious. She's like, you're a woman. She's telling Janeway that. She's like, you're a woman. You saw my husband with your own eyes, overweight, depressed. You would have left him too, especially if you've met someone as exciting and wonderful as Gar. So that's, I love that just dialogue right there. I really enjoyed it.
It was very funny.
Yeah.
And Janeway's like, yes, he's very exciting, rolling her eyes. It was so funny. And then the wife is like, wait, that's why you're looking for him. You want him for yourself. And she was like, no. I don't have any.
I assure you.
No interest.
None
whatsoever. And the wife goes, wait, is he not good enough for you? And Janeway's like, no, it's not. It's just. And then she grabs Tuvok's hand.
She says, I already have a man.
I already have a man. And it was the most awkward sort of funny Tuvok's expression.
No, totally. Because Tim is standing there with such erect posture. And his hand is just out holding her hand like that. He's not even moving anywhere closer to her, right? He's not showing no emotion, which is, that's why it's so damn funny.
They're an awkward couple.
Yes. Very awkward. Oh my God.
The wife or the ex-wife, the adulterous wife says, okay, he's on his way to a gambling tournament.
Yeah.
And when you see him, tell him to hurry home.
Oh my gosh.
So we do have that. And then we cut back to Janeway and Tuvok. They sort of awkwardly let go of hands. It was very funny.
So good.
And she sighs. So I think another one where they let go of the hands, they look at each other, then she sighs and like puts her head down. Like she had to, that was painful to have to play.
Oh, it was my just
funny.
Gosh.
Very funny.
I loved it.
So we go back to the floating hospital. We're on the red level. We see that Tevis is feeling better. And he says to the doctor, why did I get cytoglobin? Why did I get the medicine? And he asks if the doctor had done anything wrong. Had he broken any rules or anything? The doctor lies.
Yeah.
He doesn't tell him the truth. But he does say you're going to need several more injections, and he says he's convinced Chelik to recalculate his TC number, and now he's authorized for more cytoglobin.
Yeah,
and Tevis still is like, you know, there's I'm worried because there's other people that are more deserving than me of this treatment. Tevis is such a good guy.
He is.
He's just a good guy.
So good that he actually offers to help the doctor inject more people.
Mm-hmm. We do see that the doctor goes over to Voge, that he's got more cytoglobin down there.
Voge is freaking out. Voge is like, heck? You stole this? What are you doing, huh? Yeah. So, but Voge does join in at the end.
Voge does.
Like, okay, I'll do it. Yeah.
Voge does join in, and they're going to go finish before they're caught. So we cut back up to the blue level. And this is where Dysak finally is starting to figure it out. Dysak says to the doctor, you know, why are you prescribing all of this unnecessary medication for my patients?
Right.
And then the doctor this is a great sort of turn on the con, by the way.
He flips the table on him right here.
The doctor flips the table because Dysak's uncovered it, but the doctor says, hey, you've been very successful, right? You don't need as much medicine because you're doing such a great job. So he's playing to his ego.
Right. Saying because of that, they're not going to give you as much allocation for next month. You might come up short because of you're doing such a good job.
Yeah. And then if you come up short, you're going to fail with less medicine. Your cure rates are going to go down.
Yeah.
And if your cure rates are down, you could get demoted. So
Yeah, so you might go down to red
you
level.
Might go down too. So
yeah,
he says, you know, you should, you know, pad these numbers and get more medicine just to keep, make sure you've got plenty of medicine around. Yeah. And just then Chella comes in, asks if there's a problem. Yeah. And Dysik has an opportunity to turn the doctor in, but you see that moment of decision. Dysik says, no, no problem. He says something at the end like, the doctor is learning this system very well.
So, yeah. Yes, he is.
We go back down to the red level, and the patients are starting to look better. There's more people up and around. Some are virus free, we learn. Yeah. The sick people are getting better. Voji even now is like into this. He wants more medicine diverted. Mm-hmm. The doctor says, Dysik and I have a professional understanding now. I like the doctor's line when Voge is, you know, at first he didn't want anything to do with this. Now he wants more.
Yeah.
And the doctor says, that feeling when healing someone, it's infectious, isn't it?
Yes.
I thought that was a clever way to say it.
Yeah.
Tebbis is feeling much better now. He fixes some kind of medical scanner.
Yeah, it was like a tricorder, a medical tricorder. He
it looked like
it.
A medical, a medical tricorder. And he says he wants the doctor, even though he's feeling all better and basically cured.
Yeah.
He wants the doctor to say that he's still sick. Yeah. So he can
stay there. He doesn't have to go back to the factory or the mine or wherever the heck he's working at. So he can just be there to assist and learn from the doctor.
Yeah. The doctor says, well, I don't want to stay here long enough to, you know, teach you medicine. I hope I'm gone much sooner than that, but you can learn from Voge.
Yeah.
We leave that scene. We see, you know, the doctor's assistant seems to be working and his con game seems to be working. Mm-hmm. We go to space. We see Voyager fly by and the crew run some scans. They do find Gar's ship and his biosignature. Yeah. And Tuvok suggests, actually, I think Chakotay may suggest that we drop out of warp and latch onto him really quick, like just fly right up there and drop out just before he can get away.
Yeah, because Kim says, should I hail Gar? And Janeway is afraid that he might try to slip away. And Chakotay does suggest that. Yeah, let's just sneak up on him. Let's creep up on him.
Sneak up on him, creep up on him, and then drop out of warp just and then, in time to
bam,
tractor him.
Tractor beam him, yeah. Cool shot, though, when we did that, though, right? It's like
very cool shot. Yeah. I like Janeway's reaction, too, when Chakotay suggests that. She's like, I like it. It had like a little extra sauce on it when she did that. I like it.
So does that count as a JC moment?
I think so.
Yeah. I think so too.
Okay.
Okay.
We go to space. We do see this tractor moment. It was very cool.
It was.
We go back on the bridge. Gar is hailing us and, you know, Janeway demands the doctor be returned. And he says, I don't know anything about it.
Yeah.
And we scan the ship. We don't find the doctor on his ship. He says, see, I don't have it. I told you. And he tries to break the tractor with a feedback pulse. Mm-hmm. And Janeway has just lost patience. And she's like, beam him to the brig.
Yeah. We should do that more often.
Just beam him direct. Don't even fight this guy.
Yeah, no.
Beam him directly to the brig.
Yeah. No compensating Harry. Just beam him right to the brig. Yep.
Yeah.
Which Harry does.
And by the way, so when we say beam him to the brig right away, it goes back to Gar and he sort of looks over his shoulder, almost as if he I don't know. It was
like hears the beam out.
Yeah. Like, oh, is that a transporter beam I hear?
I like that though.
It was a weird choice,
but again, oh, come on.
I felt what is he doing? I just didn't understand it. Like nobody's walking. We're not going to his ship.
Don't pick on my friend, John.
I don't know. Fine. Okay, so we go to the Planet Hospital at night now, and this is where it's a different shot from down on the ground level at night. We do see the windows, and these people have windows. I was very relieved.
Yes.
And then we're back in the red level.
Yeah.
And the doctor sneaks in, and he kind of turns on a light over by Tebbis's. He's going to go treat some patients with him.
Yeah.
And Tebbis is gone. Just an old lady in the bed.
Mm-hmm.
And he asks the computer, he's like, locate patient R12.
Yeah.
And then Voge enters. We learn that Tebbis was transferred to level white.
Level white, yeah.
And doctor's like, oh, is that good? Like,
level white? Yeah, recovery area? Yeah.
Recovery. And he goes, no, it's the morgue.
Dun, dun, dun. Poor Tebbis. Gosh darn it.
Poor Tavis. He was just a good guy.
What do you think about this, Robbie? I mean, R12 is the patient, right? That's what Tavis was known as. Does that remind you of anything currently on television?
R12. No.
Stranger Things. 11. That's her patient number. And they call her 11 on the show. Mm. So I'm just wondering if maybe those brothers that produce and the showrunners of Stranger Things maybe are Star Trek fans. And somehow maybe this episode sort of worked on their subconscious. Maybe.
Maybe.
Okay. I'll throw that
out. R12. I will say that the B4, whatever the blue level patient, was a much higher letter and a lower number. So I feel like if you're patient A1,
yes,
you're super duper. And if you're patient Z1000,
you're getting no care at all. You're sitting on the sidewalk outside the hospital.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Anyway, we go to the blue level and the doctor is pissed off. He goes to Chelik, demands an explanation, wants to know why.
For the death of R12.
Yes. Chelik demands an explanation. And Chelik says that Tebas died of an untreated secondary infection.
Secondary infection, yeah.
He should have died from the chromavirus, but someone gave him cytoglobin injections that they weren't supposed to.
Yeah.
And Chelik is like, I know what you're up to. And the doctor gets really emotional here.
Yeah.
And says, you know, I'm trying to save this boy. And Chelik says, I'm trying to save society.
Yeah.
So it's that fundamental question of like, you know, is, you know, sacrifice the one for the greater many, or, you know, it's that classic argument.
What is the argument? Here. How does that go?
It's the Borg argument. It is. It's the Borg argument.
It is. Like, but we're not getting it right though. I can't remember it and you can't remember it clearly. So we're both like, how does it go? Okay. All right.
But it's the idea of like, you know, is the greater good more important than the individual?
Does the lives of the individual outweigh the lives of the few masses of the, yeah.
I don't know. We're really messing.
We are.
Anyway, they have this debate. They have this, you know,
ethical debate.
Yeah. And Chelik says, I was hired to make difficult decisions that other people didn't want to have to make, which is very true. A lot of times we, you know, send off the hard decisions, especially medical life and death stuff, to, you know, nursing homes or doctor. We want to wash our hands of it. And the doctor is kind of fighting for the individual and right there in the front line. So it's a great scene. I thought it was, really
it is a
well,
good scene.
Well,
and this whole episode just reminds me of, you know, unjust things that happen in our own medical system, you know, when it comes to insurance and all that. So, all right.
But at the end of this debate, Chelik basically tells the doctor that now you are restricted to only level blue and that you're going to be directly connected. Your hollow emitter is going to be connected to the allocator.
The allocator will move you around. Yeah.
Will decide what you do and how long you have to do it. And AI is going to make all the decisions now, just like Microsoft Bing. Okay. Mm-hmm. The doctor gets sort of transferred over. You have 6 minutes to treat patient B3.
I do like that they used a different effect. Did you notice that? Like
whatever.
The minute he's connected to the allocator computer, now when he fritzes from one place to another, it looks different than when he, you know, fritzes out normally without being connected to the allocator. Yeah, with us. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Pretty cool. We go to the space flyby next. And then inside the brig, Tuvok is interrogating Gar in this scene. he's not getting very far. He threatens a mind meld, which Gar's like, what is that?
Yeah.
Tuvok says, well, it's an invasive, very disturbing procedure. And you better cooperate. And then Neelix pops in.
Yeah.
It's dinner time. Yeah. And I love Neelix in this scene. He's very cool.
He is.
Seems like he's being so helpful.
He hands him that bowl of what looks like twigs. Just look like twigs and just unedible things, essentially. Yes. But not to Gar. It's like he's eating beef stroganoff. He's so excited. He's like,
so excited. Yeah. And Neelix is super cool and smooth about it. And Neil says something like, I'm glad it wasn't my cooking that made you sick because, you know, I felt so bad. Neelix said, until I realized it was just a ruse for you to get close to the doctor. So Neelix kind of, you know, calls it and he doesn't deny it.
Yeah.
But he says, yeah, I'm glad you like this. I used Talaxian worm root as the base.
Yeah.
Ugh.
And he goes, some people react badly. And when they cut to the reaction shot of Gar, I thought I saw his head change color a little bit. And I thought, no, that's just, I don't know. It's just the lighting changed or something when we adjusted his head or something, because they didn't, they definitely did not do visual effects for that, where that made his skin turn a different color a little bit or darker. I don't think that happened. That was just a lighting effect. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
But he does give him the Talaxian worm root and,
it's affecting him. You can see it.
Yeah. He explains, oh, this was give some people a horrible reaction and it could be very painful abdominal spasms,
which increase in severity for 30 hours, 40 at the most. So this is more than a day of pain, which gets worse and worse. Yeah.
He's going to be really, really sick, he realizes. And Neelix is just cool and collected.
Yeah.
And then Tuvok calls sick bay and Neelix says, oh, don't worry, Mr. Tuvok. It's not fatal. It's just horribly unpleasant. But he does say there's an antidote and Gar wants the antidote
immediately.
And Neelix says, well, unfortunately, our doctor's the only one that can administer it. So you better, you know,
tell us where he's at.
And then Tuvok takes Neelix to the side. This is one of those shots where I felt like we went from a two shot of Neelix and Gar just 5 feet away as if they're having a private conversation in the same shot. And I was like, this should have been shot a little differently. So it felt a little more intimate and separate from Gar. It just felt like they didn't have much time.
Yeah.
So they were just doing the simplest way.
Mm-hmm.
But it just felt flatly. I made a note, you know.
Yeah.
It just felt flat all around the shots in this brig.
Mm-hmm. So this aside, Tuvok is asking Neelix whether he deliberately poisoned Gar. And Neelix is like, no, just relax. He's just having gas pains. And Tuvok is like, your actions are not only against regulations. And then Neelix cuts in, well, didn't I hear someone threaten a mind meld? So they're having this tete-a-tete.
Yeah, they both are trying to con him. And, Tuvok's trying to say, you know, Neelix, you can't do that. You can't poison him. And he's like, no, it's a con. And so was your mind meld. You know, he just needs encouragement. He says something like, I think he needs all the encouragement he can get or something like that.
Yeah.
Anyway, cute little scene. Mm-hmm. Clearly, they're getting him some information. They're putting the pressure on Gar.
Right.
Then we go to the red level.
Yeah.
And Dr. Vosges is working on a patient when a nurse informs him that he's got to prepare that patient for discharge.
Right.
And Vosges, who's now gone to that ethical side with the doctor, is like,
He's mad.
He's very angry. That, you know, he's being asked to discharge a patient and it's not even, you know, at the end of the shift and his shift is not over yet.
Right. So he says, you can discharge him at the end of the shift. He's not even over yet. So he's very adamant about this new information from Chellick.
Yeah. Then the allocator calls out to Voge and says, report to level blue to assist Dr. Dysak in surgery.
Right.
So we go up to
Level blue,
the doctor is scanning a patient up there and Vosges enters and he never saw this level before.
I know, which is kind of shocking.
But he's like, whoa, this is how it is on level blue. But Vosges goes to talk to the doctor and the doctor basically says, hey, I want you to smuggle my holometer off this blue level.
Yeah. And it was the doctor who actually sent that message. It wasn't Dysak. Mm-hmm. So it was
it wasn't Dysak.
Yeah. It was a fake message. Mm-hmm.
And he has a little kit with some tools. He asks Vosges to smuggle him out. And then suddenly the allocator moves him across the room.
Yeah.
Which I thought was funny.
Yeah, it was.
I guess there's like 12 patients that are being sent home and will probably die.
Yeah.
As the computer is like counting down the time that he's going to be shut down, that the doctor's hollow emitter will be shut down. Finally, Vosges agrees to take it There's like 10 seconds left or something.
Yeah, and he takes, he agrees at the very last second, basically.
Yeah, the doctor says, just trust me. And so he does. He takes the mobile emitter. Okay, so now we go back to level red, and there's a boom up at the top of the scene out of black. Kind of, it was a good transition. I'll give Terry Wendell a thumbs up for that. It was a nice camera movement and transition. Tellett basically says to the doctor, you know what, you're just too much trouble, and I'm going to have to deactivate you. And just then, the doctor sort of swings him around and injects him with this like chromovirus and blood factors from Tebis.
So yeah, now the same thing Tebis had. He's injected
basically turning him into he's turning him into the same exact situation that Tebis was in, and he basically wants Chellus to experience what these sacrificial patients were experiencing down below. And he says, you're going to be a patient in your own hospital.
Right.
And he puts him on a bed. The allocator now scans him and thinks that he's Tebis.
Right.
Because he has the blood factor in there. Mm-hmm. And the doctor demands from Chellus a supply of cytoglobin that's being used as this preventative treatment.
He wants to treat denied.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Treatment denied. And then we have a space flyby. We go onto the bridge. Paris says we're entering orbit. So they're finally getting close to the doctor. Janeway orders a scan for the doctor. We cut down to the red level. Boge is scanning Chellick and says, you know what? He's dying, basically.
Well, the doctor is basically saying that, you know, when we get the cytoglobin that I requested, we'll be able to treat everybody. Yeah, including Chellick as well.
Because now you're Chellick. You're part of this group that you've been ignoring. The people that are dying and getting sick because of your allocator quotients or whatever, you're now one of them. How does it feel?
Yeah. And Chellick pleads to Voge. He's like, please, I need the medicine now. And Voge says, I only have level red clearance. I can't give it to you. I'm not authorized. And Chellick says, well, find someone who is. Now we're on the bridge again.
Torres finds the doctor's signature. Voyager finally has found his program, but she can't get a lock on him. Torres can't get a lock because his program has been interfaced with the ship's, the hospital ship's computer. So it's being blocked out. And on the bridge, the allocation module actually answers when they hail.
Yeah, it's the allocator.
For the doctor. Yeah. It's the allocator talking to them. Mm-hmm. And I was like, who is that? Who did that voice?
Did you find the allocator? That?
No, I don't know.
Okay.
I wonder if it was someone in the loop group, because I didn't recognize that voice. But
me neither. Yeah.
But we learned that that the allocator can't talk to them because Chellick is the only one that's authorized to communicate with alien species.
So we're in a catch 22 here. Chellick is clearly unable to talk to anybody. He's lying on a hospital bed right now.
Yeah.
So we jump back to level red, and Dysik comes in and says, are we having a problem here? And Chellick I love this scene. Chellick is like, Dysik, finally. So Chellick feels like he's saved, right? Mm-hmm. And Voge says, like, look, I'm sorry, I had to tell him. And Chellick says, well, what are you waiting for? Give me the cytoglobin. And Dysik says, like, I don't think I can. And he's like, what? He's like, well, cytoglobin is not authorized for level red patients. So all that policy that was put in place by Chellick is now operating against him, which is such a wonderful, you know, everyone's watching this going, yes, a little bit of redemption here. Yeah. You know, Dysik keeps saying he doesn't want to break the rules. And Chellick says, I'm the one that made the rules. So he's getting very frustrated. He says, well, then you should be pleased. I held them in such high regard. So he's sticking to it. But we jump out of that scene back to the bridge. And Torres says that she cannot transport him without damaging his matrix. Yeah. So Janeway basically tells everybody that we have to go get him. That's what has to happen. So she orders Chakotay. And Chakotay goes to Torres. Yeah. So
Torres and Chakotay head down. And we go back to level red.
Yeah.
Basically, Dysik says, you know, he's not conspiring with the doctor, but he does think that the doctor's insights into their system are profound.
The whole resources thing. If he doesn't request enough resources for Level Blue, right, that he won't get what he needs the next month. So Chelek thinks this is ridiculous. He's like, what are you talking about? He doesn't know the doctor essentially conned Dysak at this point.
So right in the middle of Dysak basically saying, like, the way the rules are set up right now, I have to, you know, game the system a bit, and we need to change the system. And just then, Torres and Chakotay beam in. And the doctor here, this is where he goes, you know what? I'm busy with a patient right now and turns back. Do we have an agreement? He says,
but very importantly, we totally forgot about this. He's the way he works it. He flips it on him again. The doctor says, I know at least a dozen people who should be treated for arterial aging. Saving their lives would just be a side effect. So he's going with the arterial aging thing to transfer these allocated resources.
It's almost like in America on your health insurance forms.
Yeah.
It's like when doctors, and we've all been through this, where the doctor says, well, if I check off that it's a skin rash, then I can give you this medicine. Like, they're all gaming the system.
Yes.
You know, well, insurance will cover it if I say that it's this, but it's like, why don't we just help people instead of creating these systems that people have to game, you know?
I mean, watching this episode did make you think of our frustrating
absolutely
medical system, correct?
Health insurance.
Oh my gosh.
For sure.
Don't get me started.
The allocator.
Yeah.
But Chelek finally does agree to change, you know, to address this situation. He agrees. They have a deal.
Yeah.
And then we go to sick bay. There's a space flyby. We go to sick bay. This is Seven's first scene in the episode.
No.
It's upside down. Unbelievable.
Can't
believe she's not been in the episode.
Stranger Things. Okay.
Yeah. The doctor says, the whole time I've been away, you've stayed pretty healthy, it looks like. She's like, Doc, you've only been gone for 4 days. But in his mind, it's just been this epic journey.
He's been gone for months.
And he's like, well, a lot can happen in 4 days, you know? But she's fine. And then he says, hey, before you leave, could you maybe run a checkup on my program? Mm-hmm. She's like, why? Is there some problem you've experienced? And he says, no, but he just wants a routine checkup. You know, he was interfaced with this alien computer. Maybe it's smart. And she does a little checkup and says, no, you're good. Everything is 100%.
Yeah.
And she says, you seem disappointed. You know, was he expecting some kind of malfunction? Or?
Yeah. And he was. Yes.
He was hoping for it, because he said he intentionally poisoned a man.
Yeah. He came clean to her right there. I was surprised that the character did that. I was like, okay.
Yeah. Because he injected Chelek with the virus or the illness that could have killed him.
That's right.
But he said he did it for the greater good, to save dozens of patients' lives. And that didn't feel good to him.
Yeah.
Didn't feel ethically right.
And it ends on that note, pretty much, right? Yeah. I mean, that's sort of like, oh, okay, I'm not malfunctioning. So that's why the conundrum came in my haiku, because it is sort of like, okay, so how do you deal with this, you know? It's just...
Yeah. Yeah, he didn't malfunction. She basically says that's what, in my mind, I thought she says, you have a clean bill of health in the end. I felt like what she's saying is, that was the right thing to do.
Oh, so she's absolving him? You felt like she was absolving him?
A little bit of like, there's nothing wrong with you. What you did was the right thing.
I didn't hear it that way, but okay. I can see where you, I can see the other side of the coin now.
Yeah.
What do you rate this thing?
I enjoyed this episode, actually. I may have some complaints about
this number. I want to, go.
I am going to give this a 7.5.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. It's not a rave. It's not one of my top tens, but it's solid episode. And I'd never seen it before. Didn't remember anything about it. So 7.5.
I will join you in the sevens, and I'm going to say 7.4. I'll go one less than you. Just a little bit, but I'm ballpark with you. I'm your neighbor. All right.
Let's bring up, pulling up the...
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Captains and Admirals average rating is 7.6.
Oh,
we were closer.
We're almost neighbors, we've ever been. Yeah, that's wonderful.
As both of us together, you and I were both very close. Mm-hmm. And
the Captain and Admiral average was very close too. What was your lesson?
My lesson, I basically wrote down, sometimes you have to break the rules for a higher moral value, something that is more important than the rules. The rules usually keep us all in line and on track, but not always. Sometimes we have to step outside of them. So what about you?
Mine's going to be more along the lines of, don't let bureaucratic red tape get you down, because it happens in almost every part of life in some way, shape, or form. So,
well, there you go. A good episode, a solid seven something for all of us.
Honestly, I thought you were going to trash it. I did.
Oh, really?
And you didn't. So no. I'm actually excited that you didn't trash it.
I didn't. I thought the actors were really good. It sort of involved all of us a little bit, mostly in a B story, but it wasn't just one of our characters hanging out on a planet with one other character. Those are the ones where I feel it's so small. This was the Doctor interacting with a lot of interesting characters in that that world felt fully fleshed out in a way that I didn't miss the fact that we didn't have a ton of screen time for our characters. Yeah. But Janeway was hilarious to me.
All right, everyone. Thanks for tuning in to our recap and discussion of the episode Critical Care. And join us next week when Robbie and I will be recapping and discussing the season 7 episode Inside Man.
Yes.
We'll see you then.